everyone, and welcome back to another episode of NYY Takes, a Pinstripe Perspective and Pinstripe Prospects podcast. It is the night before Christmas, aka opening day. I am super excited, but I need to ask my friends, my colleagues, my fellow Yankee fans, are we happy today?
No.
Welcome back, Toe.
Well, here's
from
the thing.
Your undisclosed location.
I'm missing opening day, and there are two people on this pod who are going to be there, and I was so excited to watch a game with them, but no, unfortunately, circumstances take me to a whole different part of the world, so I will not be attendance tomorrow at opening day, and that's why I'm not happy.
That was quite the plot twist, and you know, we're certainly going to miss you tomorrow, buddy, but I think this summer we'll try to get the band together.
I'm very happy and everything is great and our podcasts are extremely interesting. So everyone should listen to them this year because they're great. We have great insights. No, it's good. I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be a good season. Spring training was not great, which we'll get into why there's maybe some reasons for pessimism. But for now, it really does feel like Christmas night. This is one of the best days of the year coming up. And I will be firmly ensconced behind my desk, not watching, but I will be following along on my phone and wishing I was with the two of you having a great time at the stadium.
Yes, we'll have to get all four of us at the stadium at some point this season. I think we'll be able to make that happen. I am very happy. First of all, Toe, who has disappeared from his camera, has actually joined my trio of season ticket holder. So it's myself, a family friend, and now Toe is the third member of our little group. So you will be seeing you'll be getting a lot of at game content this season, slash a lot more complaining about things that are wrong or potential improvements that the stadium made. There's some new food. The 99 burger looks expensive, but kind of cool. But no, I'm happy. I'm excited. I think we should start with something positive, something to look forward to, and that is the fact that the Yankees did something that they don't do and something that we spoke about extensively on our last podcast, and that's call up a young rook for opening day. Anthony Volpe will be the starting shortstop on Thursday, batting ninth, according to Aaron Boone, most likely. Who knows? Things could change. I mean, before this news dropped, candidly, I was not very excited for tomorrow. There's a lot of injuries on this team. Kind of everything that it was meant to be was put on pause for the most part. And then this news makes it a little more exciting because it's like, oh, okay, we have our next Derek Jeter wannabe in the on the MLB level, and obviously Aaron Judge kind of maybe being the first one there, but we have a potential new fan favorite, so I'm very excited. Is anyone surprised that he's up?
Yeah, I have to start off this year by eating crow, the first of many times I'm likely to eat crow on this podcast this year, because I came on here a couple weeks ago and I said smugly that the Yankees did not do position battles during spring training and that wasn't who they were and that they would never do that. And lo and behold, they were actually doing a position battle during spring training. I mean, there's an argument to be made that maybe we thought at the beginning that IKF was the front runner, but he was probably not really in the conversation. But I think, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, all of us probably would have agreed that the job was Oswald Peraza's to lose. And Oswald Peraza just didn't hit during spring training, and Volpe did, and now Volpe is the starting shortstop. So I don't think you can look at that and say anything other than they were looking at how the players were playing during the spring training games. It's a very un-Yankee-like thing to do. But what it does make me think is that perhaps we are moving into a new and different age of management with the Yankees, whereby there actually is more attention being paid to what's going on the field day to day rather than just the, you know, the detractors like to say the spreadsheets, right? The plan. Maybe there is more of just like gut feel kind of happening. And, you know, a lot of reporters were saying that, you know, Aaron Boone was banging the table for Volpe based on what he had done during spring training. So could this be the start of a subtle adjustment in the team's overall MO? Maybe. And if so, that'd be exciting in my opinion.
Yeah, well said, Matt. We all sort of thought that it was Peraza's job to lose, but you know, he kind of played himself out of it. The Yankees held the true competition, and you know, I was pretty adamant about him making the roster. I didn't think it'd be him starting at shortstop, but that's going to be pretty awesome. And I'm just glad that we don't have to see IKF on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how much it says to, you know, if we want to talk about how this could be like a new generation of how the Yankees approach things, maybe. But I also think just based on what we heard about how the decision was made and how Cash spoke about it, the Yankees are a team that to me seem like they make all their decisions based on, you know, kind of like a majority rule. It never seems like there's one guy calling all the shots. It definitely has never really felt like Cashman is the one calling all the shots. Just felt like everyone in the organization, top to bottom, thought Volpe was the opening day guy, including Volpe himself. So I think it was one of those situations where they actually didn't really have a choice because everyone was looking around the room being like, oh, we all think Anthony Volpe should be the opening day shortstop. I think this is the only situation where that would happen, or that's the only situation that would have to take place for this to happen, is everyone needs to be on the same page. And I think it's a very rare thing to find. I like to think that it would, you know, this is a change for the future and the Yankees are looking towards what other teams are doing, like the Braves, and want to make some changes. But I think this was just a decision that everyone agreed with, so they made it.
Well, first of all, Coles, you're welcome. And second of all, I think that part of this reason is think of what the Yankees didn't get in order to keep Anthony Volpe, from the Luis Castillos of the world to a lot of the other pitchers and position players that were on the market in years past at the trade deadline. The Yankees held firm in saying that, no, Anthony Volpe is our guy. They didn't go after Carlos Correa. They didn't go after Trey Turner. They didn't go after the other free agent shortstops that were out there. So if you were to send down Anthony Volpe after the spring that he had and after the opportunity cost that was incurred in order to keep him, I think that would have sent a message to the fans that, hey, like, you know, we're not really sure about this guy. And then, of course, the fans would have gone up in arms because he's the guy that they were keeping. And they were saying, wait for Volpe, wait for Volpe, wait for Volpe. He's going to be the best prospect that we've had in a while. And look, they made the good decision, I think, because frankly, I don't think they had a choice given the way he performed, given everything that happened before, and given that Peraza, who was probably the incumbent, I would say, but he didn't play his way into earning the position. So, yeah. I think it was all of that, and I think everyone in that room did realize all of the factors in that situation.
And kudos to the team, too, for actually just going out there and giving Volpe the job, too, because in previous years and previous or other teams, there would have been the idea behind service time manipulation. You know, it could have been very easy for them to put Peraza on the roster, have him start, wait a few weeks, call up Volpe. But the way that Volpe performed in spring training, that he came to win the job, there, by the time it was like 3 weeks in or whatever was left in spring training, it was clear that he should be the starting shortstop. There was really no logical reason to send him to Scranton.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Les, because it was in some ways a lose-lose situation for the Yankees, because either you call Volpe up, someone that has that struggled mightily last season with the jump from Double A to Triple A, who's striking out a lot more, just wasn't hitting well. And you call him up and he struggles and it kind of stunts his growth a little bit. And he comes up as someone with all of this hype and someone that's supposed to be, you know, the next young Yankee shortstop, versus you keep him down, let him develop. But then at the major league level, you have everyone chomping at the bit for Volpe to then be called up. You have how everyone dislikes IKF and Peraza just not being able to perform. And then you have Oswaldo Cabrera, who's not quite like the most natural shortstop. So there was actually no real way for the Yankees to for sure win here, except in the short term by just calling up Volpe and making people happy and being like, all right, let's see how this works. So I guess my question is then, how long do you guys think the leash is? You know, what if he's really just putrid for a month? Obviously, he could be amazing. Obviously, he could be solid. But let's say he comes out and just isn't ready to some degree. Is he?
I think he's got a leash.
What's the leash?
He's, yeah. I think they're going to ride. I don't, you know, just to kind of say, I have no idea how long they let him go. I mean, I think they're going to give him as long as he's playing well in the field and he's having competitive at-bats and getting on base. And not playing in a way that makes them take him off the field. You know, he played his way into the job. I think they're going to give him a longer leash to play his way out of it. If he's having good at bats and he's working hard, he has a good attitude. I don't see any situation. Well, I don't want to say I don't see any situation, but I think they're going to give him as long as he needs to get right. And this lineup's not dependent on Anthony Volpe to go out there and carry them day after day. It is Aaron Judge. It is Stanton, it is Anthony Rizzo that are the guys that are going to carry this lineup for most of the season. So they're not basing it on this rookie kid that's going to carry them the whole season.
Yeah, the leash is, I think, almost non-existent. They're not going to. They didn't bring him up just to send him down if he has a poor April. That's not going to happen. It's going to take many months of sustained bad performance, and not just like a low batting average or a few errors in the field, but like really poor contact quality, lots of strikeouts. He's going to have to look seriously overmatched for them to entertain the notion whatsoever of sending him down to AAA. You don't make a decision like this and then backtrack on it 2 weeks into the season. At least that would, I mean, I've been wrong about this in the last 2 weeks, but that strikes me as a very un-Yankee-like thing to do. They make a decision, they're going to stick to it. I mean, we saw them head into last year with IKF as the starting shortstop, and then right up until playoff time, he was the starting shortstop. So, and this is their, you know, one of the best prospects they've had in years, not just a stopgap signing. So they will give him plenty of time, plenty of opportunities, and I think we're going to see him as the everyday shortstop for the foreseeable future, well into the season.
Two things here. Number one, I think that lease is controlled by someone named Oswald Peraza. If Volpe is really struggling in the majors and Peraza is killing it in AAA, I don't think the Yankees will have much of a choice, considering that they're both top prospects, and the decision was predicated on performance on the field. So I think that Peraza's performance will have a lot to do with how long Volpe's leash is. But also, you have to remember this, and this is from Ryan Garcia on Twitter. Jeter had an 89 WRC plus in his first 383 plate appearances in the majors. Jorge Posada had a 96 WRC plus in his first 239 appearances. Cano had a 90 WRC plus in his first 170 plate appearances. And the man himself, Aaron Judge, had a 94 WRC plus in his first 153 plate appearances. Remember, after that mammoth home run in his first at bat, he basically struck out every single time after that. So, yeah, I just think that you know, it depends on Peraza, and B, you have to temper your expectations about Anthony Volpe. I'm sure he was facing less than major league caliber pitching in spring training. He probably destroyed that, but there will be an adjustment period. And as long as there's not that much pressure on him to, you know, be an all-star in his first half season in the big leagues, and you say, okay, if he's around league average, making solid contact, making good plays in the field, then I think you can keep him there.
Yeah, I think it's I think my main thought is definitely that the leash is very long / non-existent. It depends, like, you know, I think it would have to look really, really bad for there to be any drastic measures taken. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm very excited. This is the first time this has happened pretty much ever, right? I mean, they've never really called up a rookie opening day and said, all right, go out there. It's been a slow process.
Has there been any situation in which, like, it should have happened?
I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Maybe Gleyber Torres, but even then, he's not the homegrown guy. So I don't think fans, well, he isn't, right? He wasn't drafted by the team. So I think in that sense, maybe the fans weren't as, you know, clamoring at the bit for, or chomping at the bit. Sorry, it's early in the morning here. They weren't chomping at the bit for him to get called up. And in the case of a person, of a player like Judge, for example, he simply wasn't ready. I mean, he got called up in like what, July, August, same with Gary Sanchez. So yeah, I think this is the first time in recent memory, I would say, that that there's someone who is so deserving of the opening day nod. Do you guys know who the last opening day position player rookie to start was for the Yankees?
Wasn't it Matsui? I know that doesn't really count, but
You're thinking a little bit too far back.
Oh. Keigawa.
Position player.
Oh, missed that part.
Hint.
Thinking too far back.
Enlighten us.
The man whose number Anthony Volpe took.
Oh, Brett Gardner. That's awesome. That's a great trivia question.
Yeah, that is a good trivia question. But keep that one chambered.
But it wasn't the difference, though. It wasn't Gardner's debut, though, was it?
Probably not. He came up in September to run.
Yeah. But still, that's a good factoid.
Good job.
Interesting. So another thing that I wonder is, this might just be dumb, but how much of this decision maybe had to do with the fact that the Yankees, before this happened, were going to be incredibly boring and had no juice and lost a lot of the momentum that they had because of all these injuries? It doesn't even have to do with the lineup. Granted, that's something we can talk about. But even their starting rotation, their starting rotation as of 3 months ago was supposed to be, or 2 months ago, whatever you want to call it, Gerrit Cole, Carlos Rodon, Nestor Cortes, Luis Severino, and Frankie Montas. I know we might have forgot about him. That has now turned into Gerrit Cole, Nestor Cortes, Clark Schmidt, Domingo Herman, and Johnny Brito, ooh, who looked great in spring. And then on top of that, you lose Bader. You lose Canely, Trevino, you know, Efros is out. There's a lot of injuries everywhere. I can't help but think this was also partially made to, because maybe the players felt like they needed it. The players were looking around and like, we've been beaten up through spring. We've lost a lot of our guys. We need some sort of an energy boost. And Volpe strikes me as someone that brings that.
I mean, maybe. I think it's one of those things where I think even if the team was relatively healthy, the Yankees were still going to be the most boring 99-win team ever, right? So it's not like maybe the boringness played a factor, but maybe they legitimately thought that with the injuries to the rotation, maybe they won't win 99 games, and therefore they needed the best bats to be in the lineup, and therefore Anthony Volpe got the nod. I don't know.
Fair enough. Which kind of leads me to...
Oh, sorry. I think on an excitement level, there is still some carryover from watching Aaron Judge last season, him re-signing with the team, the whole captaincy, that whole story. That's still really exciting coming into tomorrow. But I think Volpe does definitely dial it up quite a bit. Everybody's going to be excited. The first rookie to start at short since Jeter in 96. So that's what everybody's been talking about. It's an awesome storyline. You know, he's grew up a Yankees fan, all that stuff that we're going to hear. Jeter was his favorite player. So it really does add a extra level of excitement for tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything that you could do to cater to Yankees fans. That's like what Anthony Volpe is. He's like the kid that grew up playing shortstop, idolizing Derek Jeter, is now starting at shortstop as a rookie on opening day for the New York Yankees. Great. Everyone loves that. Who doesn't? But is it clouding our judgment of this team to start the season? There's legitimate concern to be had here, I think. And we started off positive, great, but it's time to criticize, potentially. There's a chance this team kind of just is flat. The bottom of their lineup is, as of roster resource right now, projected lineup is DJ, Judge, Rizzo, Stanton, Torres, Donaldson, Hicks, Trevino, Volpe. And I just read you their rotation. The best thing they have going for them is their bullpen, by far. With Clay Holmes, Loizaga, Wandy, Ron, Mike King is back. That's great. But are we overlooking just how south things could go to start the season? I mean, the rotation is completely different. The lineup pretty much unchanged from last season outside of Volpe. And I feel like last season the sky was falling before the year started, right? Everyone was freaking out about how bad they were going to be. So much less of that this year, and I just kind of wonder why that's the case when it feels like this team, as of now, is worse.
Well, the sky should have fallen last year if it weren't for 99. So, and 99's not going to have the season that he did last year, so I think there is cause for concern. And it's not that you're going to – and it's not necessarily that you're, like – worried about the production. I think it's more like you need someone else to step up. Is it Stanton? Is it LeMahieu? Can he stay on the field? Can Donaldson, you know, find the extra 3 feet in his fly balls? So those can clear a fence. Can Gleyber Torres be consistent throughout the year? Like, he's not going to hit 38 home runs like he did a few years ago, but can he be a guy who can, you know, deliver at a consistent pace? Can Anthony Rizzo step up a little bit, given that there's no more shift? I think you have to look at the other guys to step up, and maybe those guys will have a little bit more of a positive regression to the mean to make up for Aaron Judge not hitting 62 home runs again.
Yeah, I was finding it hard to criticize the front office this offseason when they went out and they spent real money to get Carlos Rodon. But that was kind of their only significant offseason move, apart from signing Judge to the huge contract. And now Rodon is hurt. So you are looking at a situation where, yeah, the team probably is worse right now than it was before the 2022 season. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that this team probably is not going to win 99 games this year. They'd have to get a lot of things to break really well for them to approach that win total again. It doesn't mean they won't be great. I think they're going to win the division. I think they're going to have a chance of making noise in the postseason, but yeah, I think the mood is good right now because of Volpe coming up. And because Judge is the captain and he's still in pinstripes, but otherwise things don't look particularly great at the moment.
Yeah, it feels like an offseason where, like, concerns were quelled for the most part. It's like Judge is still a Yankee. You know, they spent money on a big name in Carlos Rodon. They got Rizzo back, so Rizzo and Judge are back together. We got Volpe for opening day. It just feels like we're missing the plot somewhere, and that's that this rotation lost four guys pretty much. Bader's hurt, and the lineup's unchanged. Les, I don't know if you were going to add anything off what Matt said.
No, I definitely agree with all everything that you guys have been saying. I think another element too is, you know, the we've got Aaron Hicks in left field still. Like, he's still a member of the roster. Like, you're right though. Like, I think we just, like, over the last few minutes, I've obviously had an opportunity to kind of think about things. And you know what? Volpe does sort of add a lot of the juice to tomorrow. But yeah, you guys are right. Maybe they are a little bit boring. They didn't make the big splash outside of Rodon going into the season. They've been a little conservative in the trade market the last couple of years. So, yeah, they are a little boring going into tomorrow. But tomorrow's the most exciting day of the year.
Yeah, you know what? Let's allow ourselves to be excited and be happy. We can start, you know, crying and moaning on this podcast a week from today if, you know, they start out the gate slow. So, I think, yeah, there's room for concern. Who knows when everyone's going to be healthy again? Rodon's forearm injury is slightly concerning. He started throwing again this week. Severino, you never really know. He has never quite put it together for a full season. Even Nestor with his hamstring issue is, like, supposed to be in the rotation, but also might not be.
I think that was embellished to get him out of the WBC.
It might have been a World Baseball Classic type situation, one would hope. But on the other end, you know, Clark Schmidt finally gets his chance. Domingo Herman.
Even though no one wanted to give it to him.
Yeah, Domingo Herman also gets Domingo
Herman.
You know, his Domingo Herman-ness, which is like he just finds himself in this rotation every single
zero,
season.
Will zero be a zero?
and throws to a 3.75 ERA and is like sneakily an incredibly consistent major league pitcher. And then there's Johnny Brito, who might just come up and
again
surprise a lot of people. And then, of course,
I'm a big Johnny Brito fan. Johnny Brito has a very high floor. Very high floor.
How about you speak a little bit more on Johnny Brito then for us, honestly, for me.
For someone who hasn't been able to watch spring training because it's on at literally the middle of the night.
Sure. So my take is that Johnny Brito becomes the next Domingo Herman and that he's a guy that quietly pitches to a 3.75 ERA with like a 4.05 FIP and just goes out there every fifth day and does a decent, throws five innings, gives up, you know, four hits and a couple of runs with two strikeouts. He's a guy with a very high floor, really a fastball changeup guy, kind of sinker changeup. He's not going to blow you away. He's not a high velocity pitcher, not going to get a ton of swings and misses, but he keeps the ball down. He gets ground outs and he's a guy that's always put up good numbers, not great numbers, but good numbers at every minor league stop that he's had. So I think we're going to have a little bit of a coming out party for Johnny Brito the next few weeks. And he's going to be one of these guys that we're talking about on the pod in the end of April and saying, wow, the Yankees are in first place. And he's a guy that you point to as a reason that they're in first place after a month.
That's music to my ears. I'll be honest. I didn't watch the most spring training this season. It actually sadly might've been the least amount of spring training that I've ever watched, mostly due to a combination of the World Baseball Classic happening and March Madness being, you know, something that I watch religiously and just generally, I don't know, wasn't tuned in. I felt like a lot of the games weren't televised. I watched a lot at the beginning and then kind of lost it. So the first week of the regular season is going to be like a mini spring training for me. Like I still don't fully have a grasp on the pitch clock yet. So admittedly, bad job by me, but I'll pick it up quickly.
I'm excited to learn about that in real time.
The pitch clock?
Yeah. Again, I haven't watched a single pitch of spring training. So like,
well, you know, you're not going to be able to like go to a game and leave to go get anything because you'll leave and you'll miss three innings.
You're going to miss the first three innings anyway because you're not going to be able to get into the freaking place.
Yeah.
Take it easy.
Yeah. we don't need to go down that road again right now. I'm so curious to see how it is. Tomorrow doesn't count because I'm going to be there very early. So I'm going to get in quickly and won't have anything to complain about. You have
Clear. Please sponsor our pod.
Yeah, Clear, if you're listening somehow, please sponsor us.
You should just add them in every single post.
So probably a good time then to take a look at just like a handful of Vegas odds for Yankees players this season and the Yankees themselves. So we obviously spoke about the reason the Yankees were kind of kept afloat last season and Aaron Judge. So his over under for home runs this season is 44.5. A lot of projection systems have him at 45. Steamer has him at 45. I think most of the others have him in that range. I am going under for Judge, mostly because I think, it's hard for me to believe that he can put together a fully healthy season again, just based on his history, his size and the fact that he just got his big contract. Of course, he's not going to play every game.
Yeah, I agree. I can see him getting to 40 again. I'll peg him somewhere between 35 and 40 homers, but 45 home runs is that's a massive act to follow up on what he did last year.
Yeah. Under, I think he's going to get hurt at some point too, because Aaron Judge also not being in the contract year, like who knows how much he'll be totally locked in. He has so much, and I'm not saying that like Aaron Judge is like this aloof person or whatever, but like he has so many more off-field endorsements now. He's a captain that comes with added weight on his shoulders. We don't necessarily know how much he'll be able to stomach that load. He's not the best postseason performer ever, so maybe that's indicative of how he does under a little bit more pressure than normal. Think about how much time it took him to hit 61, 62 last year as well. And yeah, he's definitely going to miss some time. Maybe he won't get like a massive injury, but he'll pull something or strain something at some point in the year and get on the shelf for 15 to 20 days. So yeah, I think 41 is a pretty reasonable prediction. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the under as well on that, just because I don't think Boone is going to play him every single day in the second half of the season. Like, I think they're going to do a better job of managing his time on the field, managing a DH days, so stuff like that. Like, I just don't think 45 to 50 might be the high end, but I don't think he's going to get there this year.
Well, also remember that the Yankees pretty irresponsibly played him every single game down the stretch, right, just so he could tie and break the record. So he really shouldn't have gotten to 60 something last year either. So, I mean, even then you can probably say that if he let's say that Judge didn't break the record, he maybe hit like, I don't know, 59 home runs last year. Then what would his would anyone think that he would hit over 45 this year? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I will say, though, flipping to the guy on the team that's very similar to him in build, and Giancarlo Stanton, I was very surprised to see his home run total set at 28.5. For context, he hit 35 in 2021, 31 in 2022. I'm taking the over at 28.5. Two reasons. One, feels too low. Just a gut feel type thing. Two, if he's going to start playing the outfield more, we know that he has said that that makes him just feel more comfortable in the game overall. And if that's going to be an initiative that they take from the beginning of the season, I can actually see Giancarlo Stanton playing a huge role in keeping this team afloat this season. And I think he's actually a huge X factor, where it's, if Stanton's in the lineup, it makes it just a tad more scary. And if he's in the lineup and producing, which I think he will, no reason for me to think that he won't hit and have another 30 home run season. So I would take the over, and I'm surprised to see it that low. And I don't know what it's been set at previous years.
Someone must think he's going to get injured like twice this year. Like, that would be the only explanation, I think, for him not hitting over 30 home runs. I think he's going to hit 44 home runs this year. I think that Junker...
Yeah.
Wow. He's going to play the outfield more. As you said, Coles, that means he's going to be more locked in than usual. And I do think that in many ways, he's one who thrives under pressure. He was so happy to see Judge come back. He was so happy to see Volpe make the team. I think that he's built for the spotlight. And this season, frankly, it's Giancarlo Stanton's turn to step up and be the former MVP that we know he's capable of being. Last year was Judge. This year was Stanton. You saw his performance in the playoffs. He was really trying to carry the team when no one else would hit. So I don't know. I just feel like Giancarlo Stanton is going to hit a ton of home runs this year. And we'll finally say that, yeah, like, hit the Yankee-ness that we saw him exude at various points down the stretch last year is really going to manifest itself throughout the entire year, I think, this year.
I love that we're a Stanton podcast. I think that's a really crucial element of like who we are as a pod. And yes, Stanton has been one of the best Yankees of my lifetime. And I'm going to take the over here as well, because I think if for no other reason, they need a warm body in the outfield. And so he is going to just have to play more. And I think he still has the skill necessary for a high output there. So I always believe in Stanton. I would never, my pessimism will never extend to Stanton. It just, it won't go that far.
What do we say? 35 is the number for him?
I mean, his total is set at 28.5.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'd take the over.
So unless someone knows that he's coming out tomorrow and like spraining his knee and is going to miss the first month of the season, fine.
Can you tease that up to like 31.5? Because I would take that too.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a surprisingly low number. But yeah, I'm on the over on that every day of the week. Okay, last one. I think three of these is the magic number. And of course, Over under 93.5 wins for the New York Yankees this season. That's the first part of the question. Second part of the question is, do you think they can get under that and still win the AL East? My response is they will be a 92-win team, but will still win the AL East.
Wow. You do not believe in the Toronto Blue Jays, huh?
I believe in them, but I do wonder how much the new schedule is going to make an impact on teams. So as opposed
that's
to
good for the AL East.
Well, yeah, as opposed to beating up on each other. But you're playing a lot of different teams, so you're seeing guys, you know, not as often. You don't necessarily get used to a certain cadence, and I think that might just have an effect on the league a little bit as a whole in terms of a slight adjustment period. So I think you might see a slight bit more parity, and those win numbers get not so inflated because, you know, there is no really team to beat up on. Regardless of how good you think the division is, there's always one team a year that just gets the shit kicked out of them. And that's going to happen less now because you're playing, like, I think it's like six fewer games against your division opponents per year now. So I think the Yankees will win 92 games and will still win the AL East.
I have them at 94 wins, so I'm taking the over, and AL East champs. I think the balanced schedule works in their favor because there is no truly bad team in the division. So you're subtracting games against teams that are okay to great, and you're replacing those games with games against, you know, the dregs of the National League. So, and I think, honestly, true talent-wise, the Yankees were probably a 93-94 win team last year. I see them as maintaining that with the injuries that have come up, maintaining that level. I think Rodon comes back and he's fully healthy. Severino comes back quickly, fully healthy. Bader comes back quickly. You might see them exceed that total. Now, I think the odds that every single one of those injuries is resolved in the most expeditious way possible is slim. So that's why I'm a little bit less bullish, but I do think they hit the over on that win total. And I think that it's a relief that they don't have to play as many games against Toronto, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, that's not bad, Boston, that's going to be better than people think. So I think it's a blessing for the Yankees.
Yeah, I guess I'll take the over on that as well. Like, not just why would I take the under on that, any circumstance? But yeah, Matt's right. You guys are all right. You know, the division as a whole is a lot better. Baltimore could be sneaky good. I'm never going to say Boston's going to be good. They're going to be mediocre to bad at best in my book. But yeah, they're going to play some of these other teams, and they're going to take the worst that they have as well. So I think they're 90. They're definitely an over team. 94-95 wins.
Okay.
I have 94 wins as well. And I think that the Yankees will win the AL East, but I don't think they're going to win the division by more than 3 or 4 games. I think that because of the more balanced schedule, there are more wins available to all of the AL East teams across the board. And I mean, look at how the wild card was last year too, with the Mariners and the Blue Jays and the Rays. So I think that this year it's just going to be a massive, like, messed up finish to the regular season. There are going to be so many permutations and combinations that you could have in terms of division winners, wild card, and guys missing the playoffs. And it's going to be a big deal because now winning the division means something. You know, you do not want to play in those 2 out of 3 wild card series. So yeah, I think 94 wins, but there's going to be a lot of meaningful baseball throughout the entire league come middle, end of September.
And not only meaningful baseball, I think if the Yankees are going to win games, it's going to have to be winning 3-2, 3-1, 4-2, these low-scoring games where you rely on your bullpen and your pitching and, you know, the one big homer to drive you in a couple runs. And that's going to kind of have to be the recipe for a bit because their bullpen's elite and their pitching is usually always pretty solid. If the hitting can just do enough to put them in position to win games, they have the guys at the back end of the bullpen to get the job done over the course of a season. And I think that'll just end up being the big difference maker for them. So we're approaching the 45-minute mark, which means we need to get close to wrapping up, which then means I need to ask my final question. Kind of a good flashback here. The question is going to be, what's your one big prediction for this season? Last year, Matt and I started this podcast ourselves, just us two on here. My famous prediction was that Josh Donaldson would become a fan favorite. To say that was a bad choice is an understatement. And Matt's was that Jonathan Loaisiga would be an all-star. So neither of us did great. We are hoping to do a little better. So I'll kick us off. My one big prediction for this season is that Gerrit Cole will win the 2023 AL Cy Young Award. I think he has been criminally underrated somehow as a top three pitcher in baseball. I think all the things coming out of camp that people are saying about him are overwhelmingly positive and fit my narrative. And he feels kind of due to quote-unquote silence the haters. I mean, when he was in Houston, he felt kind of like a god, and it feels like that has faded at least a little bit. And I think this is the season where he finally puts it all together and comes out as, you know, the best pitcher in baseball and not just a top Cy Young finisher. Yes, Toe. Are you waving to Les's child? Nice.
But I can go anyway. I think Anthony Volpe will win the Rookie of the Year. I think that Anthony Volpe will become everything that everyone thinks that Aaron Judge is in terms of being a homegrown Yankee who really represents that team. He's a local kid. He grew up dreaming to play shortstop at opening day. Like, and look, he's shown that when under pressure, when under intense competition, he can deliver. And no, I don't think he's going to light the world on fire by any means, but I think he's going to have the best performance out of any rookie this year. And look, and everyone's going to be watching him too. And I think that adds some bias because they'll just feel like he's performing very, very well relative to others. And yeah, and then just like by being the Yankee, for him, it's not a business transaction to be the Yankee. And I think that's the biggest thing that we're going to take away from Anthony Volpe. We're just going to see how much it means to him because he grew up with it. And you know, he said he was, 8 years old when when the last World Series parade occurred. And he's going to want to change that because it's in his blood. And I just think that he's the guy that we're going to be worshipping as the homegrown Yankee who really represents the franchise for what it should be over the next decade.
What was that first sentence you used on Volpe? He's the Jeter Judge wanted to be. What'd you say?
No, he's everything off the field that everyone, that all the casuals think that Judge is. For Anthony Volpe, being a Yankee is not simply a business transaction.
Interesting. So I guess the thing I'll say about that is, one, I guess you didn't read the Athletic article today where Chris Kirschner basically got like a testimonial from every single player on the team talking about how great of a leader Aaron Judge is.
Yeah, but he can be that on any team.
No, I understand. Which leads me to my next point, where I actually kind of agree with you and agree with this sentiment generally. I think Aaron Judge is a great leader. I think his teammates respect him, and I think he does things the right way. However, I have now come to think that when it comes to Derek Jeter-ness and Yankees, what that means is being hyper-competitive and really being all about the New York Yankees. And I actually think Anthony Volpe will come to prove to be more adept in both of those things than Aaron Judge is. I think Aaron Judge commands respect and is very kind and has, you know, really good leadership skills. But when it comes to, you know, quote, being, you know, the stereotypical Jeter guy, I think Volpe will come out as finishing that or playing that role much more than Aaron Judge has, because I think Aaron Judge is actually Aaron Judge. And I think he's done it his own a different way. But I think Volpe will be much closer to what we actually remember Jeter as being.
Welcome.
No. I'm not coming to your dark side, Toe. Though I might be close. Matt, your prediction?
Okay, my prediction is a little bit intricate. So bear with me. Also, implicit in my prediction is a much less controversial prediction that the Yankees will, in fact, make the 2023 postseason. So we'll get that out of the way. The Yankees will be a playoff team this year. But my prediction is that for game one of their playoff run in October, the starting lineup will not include the following players: Josh Donaldson, DJ LeMahieu, and Gleyber Torres. And the starting infield during that game one will be, from left to right, Oswaldo Cabrera at third, Anthony Volpe at short, Oswald Peraza at second, and Anthony Rizzo at first.
Can we extrapolate that for 2 minutes?
We can do whatever you want.
Who's the left fielder then? Who's the left fielder then?
See, I had not thought about this.
Aaron Hicks has a resurgent season.
Aaron Hicks, maybe. No. I actually think there's a chance that it could be Aaron Judge in left, Bader in center, Stanton in right, and LeMahieu as the DH. That's okay. A possibility.
Or IKF in center.
IKF in center, yes.
Okay, so that took care of my next question. So you're saying that Gleyber Torres is going to be traded?
Yes.
For pitching?
Likely.
I can get behind that, yes. But it's interesting that you think that Glaber's going to be traded over a Peraza.
Yeah. Well, I think Peraza has more years of team control. That's really what it boils down to.
And you know what? Just to kind of jump in on Matt's point, Hal Steinbrenner actually made some interesting comments in the offseason where he envisions the middle infield being Volpe and Peraza. I don't know if he meant to do that on purpose, but that basically means that Gleyber Torres has no long-term future with the Yankees.
Well, he was about to get traded for Pablo Lopez, so.
Yeah, I think the writing is on the wall with Gleyber, unfortunately. I don't relish saying this. I'm the world's biggest Gleyber fan. He's been an above-average player for more years than he hasn't been. And he is not technically a homegrown player, but he might as well be at this point. I also was in the stands for his major league debut, so kind of holds a special place in my heart for that reason. So I don't like it. I love Gleyber, but I think that all signs point to his days with the team being numbered.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. It has not been amazing since he burst onto the scene those first 2 years of his career. He's had his ups and a lot of downs, all those times where he didn't run out a ground ball, or that, we try to forget about his experiment at shortstop. That actually seemed to have a really negative impact on his confidence, which I think he even said himself afterwards. I think he said he wasn't very comfortable playing there. But anyway, Les, your big prediction.
Well, my big prediction is going to be pretty interesting. My son Derek is joining us for the show, the second part of the show here, even though it's well past his bedtime. He and I were talking on the car ride over to have dinner. He and I got some pizza, and we were talking about it. I said, Derek, what do you think is going to happen this season? In my head, he said to me, Dad, I think Harrison Bader, even though he's hurt, he's going to be an all-star this season. I like him. He runs fast. He plays good defense. And since my son has reddish-brown hair, Harrison Bader also has red hair. So we think Harrison Bader is going to be an all-star, even though he's missing a little bit of time to start the season.
You're talking to the right guy if you want to talk good about Harrison Bader. I will say the injury is concerning. Obliques are never fun. But what's contract year Harrison Bader going to look like?
Year Harrison Bader going to look like having an offseason to work with the Yankees hitting team?
Right. So I think there's a lot of upside with him. He definitely wants to get paid. He definitely wants to get a contract, and that can have a negative and or a positive impact. The negative is that he overextends himself after being injured and never really makes it through a full season. And, he was injured for a majority of last season, and it could happen again this year. You never know. Someone with that speed, play center field, really relies on this athleticism, could be tough. Or he's healthy and he's an elite defensive center fielder, and he kind of picks up where he left off in the power department from the postseason last year, where he was basically the only person on the Yankees doing anything at the plate. So I feel like you'll like this. From that Athletic article today, Bader was like, yeah, Judge is awesome. When I first came over here, he would take me out to lunch in the city. You got to wonder where they were going to lunch.
Where? Yeah,
where?
I also wonder where Aaron Judge lives in the city. Murray Hill? Not anymore, right? He's too old for that shit.
He's too rich for that shit. That's for sure. Aaron Judge has made way too much money at this point, probably, to still be living in that Murray Hill penthouse. But boy, I would love to know where those two are getting lunch in New York City. That's probably a hilarious experience. I wonder if Bader tells him where to go, because Bader grew up here, effectively. Bader probably says, "You take me to lunch here." And then I'll say good things about you to Chris Kirshner.
I have a story about lunch in the Yankees after we get off the recording.
Save it for private ears. Anything else that we are missing before Christmas Day tomorrow?
Baseball's back. We have something to do in our lives pretty much every single day now.
Yeah, in other words,
this is both good and bad.
As Michael K said, it's like having your dog. It's just there every day. Just there. You want it to be on, it's on.
This was a very interesting podcast, guys.
Oh, interesting. We had interesting content, according to Matt Jarrell.
This was, believe it. This was fascinating. I was enthralled the entire episode.
Well, the thing I'm really looking forward to tomorrow, especially, is how much is the at-game experience going to change with the pitch clock? It's going to be weird that the Yankees are, like, just playing the San Francisco Giants in opening day. That, like, makes no sense. Anthony Volpe.
The 99 burger is going to be overrated. That's
the 99 burger. There's a bunch of new food. How overrated is the 99 burger?
How much is that thing? Like $20?
It's $20. It's $19.99, and they make 99 of them per game. I wonder if those will be sold out before the games even start. Probably. But anyway, I'm excited to see where this weird roster goes in April. There's so much weird stuff happening that I feel like we just kind of have to, you know, roll the dice and see where they land. But if we have nothing else to add, I'm super excited to talk about Yankees results next week. That'll be a lot of fun. Ups and downs, finally. We could have done ups and downs, but ups and downs, spring training, it's just doesn't hit the same.
Well, the down is just spring training.
Yeah, the down is just, it's not baseball season yet. But anyway, as, you know, Les needs to take his son to bed. Is that who's joining us at the game tomorrow?
No, my 13-year-old son Logan will be joining us at the ball game tomorrow. It's his first opening day. This little guy here, he'll be joining us in a few years.
Yeah, if anyone's curious, it'll be the first time myself and Les are meeting in person. So that'll be two out of three other members of this pod that I've met. Matt, we'll knock you out this year as well. And maybe we'll do an in-person podcast. Wouldn't that be crazy? But without further ado, please give us a follow on Twitter at Pinstripe Purse. If it looks like Pinstripe Peppers, you are in the right place. You can give us all a follow on Twitter as well. Myself, rcoles0206. Les at leswilliams23. Matt at mcgerald14. Toe at _cto. I actually forget.
_cto.
Thank you. Subscribe to the podcast, follow so you don't miss an episode. Tell everyone about it. We're very excited for this season. We will be very consistent in our content, and we'll have everything possible to complain about with the Yankee Stadium experience, or we're all pleasantly surprised. Who knows? But without further ado, Merry Christmas and go Yanks.